We're going to start at the beginning of Parshas Bo in the Meshech Chochma, and you may know that Parshas Bo in the Meshech Chochma is like a book. We can literally spend the whole year just on Parshas Bo. Yes, so much here on Parshas Bo. So I chose two pieces, and we'll work them out together. The first piece is on the Pasuk in Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Gimel, which is again the first piece in Parshas Bo. And the Torah says, "Gam ha'ish Moshe gadol miod bi'eretz Mitzrayim, be'inei avdei paro u'be'inei ha'am." So the Meshech Chochma is very sensitive to the sequence here. We're talking about the greatness of Moshe in the eyes of the servants of Paro and the people of Mitzrayim. Why in that order? Why is it that avdei paro comes first and then be'inei ha'am that comes second? So we'll put that question on the back burners and we'll come back to it later. Hine, Yadua, as it's well known, his Havus HaKavod Bi'Av. He's going to present two alternatives, the two ways in which a leader could gain the glory of the people. B'shtei panim, he says. Number one, may etzem ha-chachma, from the wisdom. Now, if I were to tell you that a certain leader, whatever his name is, it's irrelevant, is great in chachma, in his wisdom, how would you describe the people who would appreciate such a leader?
Want to appreciate wisdom.
Correct. They also have to appreciate wisdom. If they don't appreciate wisdom, then with all due respect, the guy could be very creative, very original, he has 180 IQ, it's not going to help them. It's only going to be appreciated by those who appreciate Chachma. So in the first category, may Otzem HaChachma, from the power of the wisdom, Shal HaNichbad, of the individual who is being respected because he's looked up to and admired as a leader of his people because of Otzem, the power of his Chachma. Now, this Chachma is not just intellectual, but this Chachma is also spiritual. It is also piety. Sometimes we differentiate between Chachma as the intellectual genius of a mathematician and piety of a person who's sanctified, who's holy. Here, we're combining the two of them. And we're saying that midosav elokiyot, when we come in contact, when we perceive this individual, this nichbad, what we see is a personification of the divine attributes. And the beautiful, wonderful, amazing leadership powers that he has, the way he leads us, the way he decides what's good for us. So we respect him, we put him up on a pedestal, we glorify him for three reasons. Number one, because of his great, powerful chachma. Number two, because of his midos elokios, because of his divine attributes. And number three, because of his amazing leadership powers. Then he goes on to say that there's a whole nother approach to to the answer to the question, how does this nichbad win over the glory, the respect of his people? Omi pulos zaros bilti musagos uploim hayotzim migeder hahergel hativi. It could be that he gains the respect of the people for another reason. And this is a different kind of leadership. He does things that are amazing, that are unusual, remarkable. They defy the normal, natural order of the universe. And the people think this man must be endowed with divine powers. Those are the two kinds of, or shall we say, two answers to the question as to how a leader achieves glory or respect amongst his people. Hine, hamechubad mechachma v'yosher hanagato. He says, how does a person who fits the first category achieve his acceptance, his admiration, people look up to him? He says, Tchilat kvodo etzel chachamim. He says that if you ask me which sector of the population is going to appreciate him and immediately admire him, it's the wise people. Hatzilim Sheba'am. Hatzilim refers to the glorious people, in the uplifted people in the name, the spiritually high people. They will appreciate him. Haim, these are Yodim Lohokir Chachmato. Lohokir means to respect. They look up to his wisdom. Vehem Chodrim Biayin Choderet El Midotav. They have this perceptive eye and they see below the surface. They have insights into this man's great attributes, his personality on a spiritual level. U'me'asher yafliu l'shalem amiti. They realize that he is the embodiment of shlemut, of a true, genuine perfection. However, it's only after that first level, if that first, shall we say, historical round, then finally, yitparsem shmo gam etzel ha'amon. Now the word ha'amon is a reference to the rank and file people. These are the people who are not necessarily endowed with great spiritual qualities, with a superior intellect, but rather they are ha'amon. Ha'amon means they are the rank and file. They're the regular people. You know, they're impressed when you change nature. They're impressed when you do things that are absolutely remarkable. V'chedras kodesh yiradu mimenu. Those who are endowed with sanctity will be afraid. They'll tremble. They'll be in awe of this person. However, when we talk about the hamon, if this ish hanechbad, this person who's respected, is respected by the Hamon because of Pulotav Hazarot Vaniflaot, these remarkable, unusual kinds of actions that he's able to accomplish. In that case, instead of being respected first and foremost by the Chachamim and the Atzilim, who Yehulal Tchila Min Hamon, it's the rank and file people that initially will respect him. Asher be'inayim bituchot yachshivu l'elokiv. They are actually convinced when they see this person that he is endowed with divine powers because he does things that are unnatural, that defy nature. Who's the person, by the way, that you think we're talking about here?
Moshe.
Moshe, correct. And Moshe could fit under these two categories. He's a great chacham, he's a great wise person. He has these midot eliyokiot, and he knows how to guide the people and influence them and inspire them. On the other hand, he's also a great person insofar as he changes nature. You know, he has control and dominion over nature. He brings about the Eser Makos. V'lemar ki hu bilyat v'yataplu olav shkarim uplio zoros b'sipur mafliyim. He says that once you have a leader who, in the eyes of the people, has divine powers, he's able to change nature, they start, what's the word when you have an avalanche, you know, a snowball effect. They start exaggerating, oh, that's a good word. They start exaggerating his amazing abilities. They start telling stories, I guess you call them urban legends, and they're full of what?
Chassidish stories.
Yeah, Chassidish Maises, and it's all lies. But by circulating these tales about this leader, Yisparsim Shmoyetz Al Hamon, his name becomes famous amongst the rank and file citizen. V'godel HaPirsum Yas Kenafayim. Once the publicity starts going as an avalanche effect, even the more intellectual people in the community, the chachamim, as we called them before, they also will be impacted by this tremendous rush, so to speak, or flow of excitement about this individual and how much they admire him. But he says, "Latil safek b'libo lemar lo lechinam yitparsem shmo etzel amon ki gam hem yichabduhu." He says that ultimately what happens is that they may doubt whether or not this individual, this leader, deserves the praise and the publicity he's getting, but at some point or another, they realize that we can trust our Monam. It's not in vain that they are publicizing his name. He must be really something special, something unusual. And he says the following. Let's talk about Moshe. On the one hand, the Torah at the end of the Chumash says that Moshe is an Ish Elokim. His leadership is incredible. Not only that, but hu manhig bebilti tivit. He must be a divine individual. He's not just a human being in the classic sense, because he's changing nature. He's bringing about miracles. Not only that, olo l'shamayim v'yorad. He went up to the heavens and he came down again. Gozer umitzav al kol chuko sateva. He has dominion and control over all the laws of nature. Umishtamei shamayim, and the celestial spheres. Mafich mipiv. He lets words come out of his mouth. V'yamaluk tzosar shchin. He brings about the plague of shchin. Beharim yado bo. I'm sorry, Beirim Yado, when he lifts up his hands, the animals come from all ends of the earth. So Rabbi Simcha is giving two examples of fantastical makos that changed the law of nature that Moshe Rabbeinu brought it all about. Is mipulos ka'ela, as a result of these public amazing changes in nature that are brought about by Moshe, is ha'mon b'mitzrayim necharadu. The entire populace of Mitzrayim was in a state of awe, a state of fear. Niv'asu, they were overwhelmed. Chil achazosam, they were frozen with fear. That's as far as the Amon Am is concerned. But lo kein achartumim v'asarim, but the officers and the sorcerers in the palace of Paro, they were not impressed by Moshe Rabbeinu's change of nature. Bidam utzvardea hikshu libam lemar. They attributed Moshe Rabbeinu's change of nature to pulos hakishuv. Moshe Rabbeinu was just a great sorcerer. O dover achar anasim bepulos hadimyon. Or maybe he's able to fool us into seeing things. He pulls the wool over our eyes. Ad ki achrei kol hit pals v'sufam. Until at the end of their, entire adventure in which they questioned Moshe Rabbeinu, finally Hodu, they admitted ki etzvelokim hu, that Moshe Rabbeinu is a divine being who's able to change nature. It's not just sorcery; it's the real thing. V'chein amru ad masayir zel lanu lemokesh. V'lo amru ha'ish. In other words, they didn't want to describe Moshe Rabbeinu as an ish. They should have said ad masayir ish zeh lanu lemokesh. Instead, they dropped the word ish and they used the word zeh. She'eino ish. They didn't want to use the word ish, which would imply a human being whose flesh and blood are no more, to describe Moshe. Ki yotzim igeder anoshi, because he's not human. He's above the human species. Vanagoso ativis, chachmoso vanvenuso, v'chol midoso, choshesh l'tova asuloso. They are absolutely in awe. Again, these are the intellectuals of Mitzrayim, the Chartumim and the Avodim, and the Sorim, of Moshe Rabbeinu's moral and ethical qualities. They realize that his humility, all of his attributes and his personality traits are all because of his concern for the next one, for the other. He's a Rahman, he's compassionate, b'chol hegyonov, in all of his thoughts, u'b'pulosav, in all of his actions. Ad ki kol mevin shera'o v'zbonin bo, anyone who is knowledgeable and saw Moshe Rabbeinu and contemplated Moshe's greatness, Omar, he declared, ki zeh Moshe ish amiti, mi beladav ein roi likar ish. No one can be called by the same word that describes Moshe, ki kulam ki behemos nimshlu negdo. If you describe Moshe as an ish, then everyone else is like an animal compared to Moshe. He's on such a high level. Umizeh, Nisparsim Shmo Eitzel Atzilim. The Atzilim are the higher elements in the culture of Mitzrayim. Ki Hevinu Chachma, so they appreciated the wisdom of Moshe Rabbeinu Vifliu Hanagosov and his great actions as a leader of his people. Umitzad Zen Nisparsim Shmo Mitchila Eitzel Atzilim Ba'am. If we focus now on the greats or the intellectuals of Mitzrayim, the higher elitists, you know, the elite, the members of the elite, they began publicizing Moshe Rabbeinu's name, appreciating him, glorifying him. So then it starts with Avdei Paro. And then afterwards, Eitzel Ha'am. So let's go back to Rav Meir Simcha's original question. Why does the pasuk describe the appreciation of Moshe Ha'ish Moshe as Gadol Miod, Beinei Avdei Paro, Ubeinei Ha'am? The sequence is first Beinei Paro, and then Beinei Ha'am. He says, Zebira Kosuv. Gam Ha'ish Moshe, which means as a human being, Vanahosa Goativis, in other words, his ability to lead the people, Gadol Miod. But first, it's Beinei Paro. Bien Avdei Paro, meaning the Avodim of Paro, which represents the elitists, they appreciated Moshe Rabbeinu. And then, Nitparsem li Avdei Paro kodem v'akach la'am. It begins with the Avodim, in other words, the people will be influenced and they will be following, so to speak, the lead or the in the footsteps of the Avdei Paro, because they look up to the Avdei Paro. And once the Avdei Paro, once Moshe Rabbeinu finally successfully achieves the admiration of the Avdei Paro, after they give up on all their attempts to try to explain away Moshe Rabbeinu as a sorcerer, etc., they finally appreciate Moshe Rabbeinu as the true divine embodiment of a human being that's divine, then at that point they influence the people of the nation, meaning the Hamon Am, to look at Moshe Rabbeinu in a whole different way and be uplifted in awe of this great man because of the way he changes nature. So again, in terms of sequence, the ones who were up front, you know, they were at the helm and they were having the frontal confrontation or encounter interaction with Moshe, they would be the one to, so to speak, check out Moshe. They went through two stages. First, they were skeptical. Finally, when they got to the level that they appreciated Moshe for who he really is, then they influenced the people, and the rank and file people began to appreciate the amazing changes in nature that Moshe was able to bring about, and that's called Beinei Avdei Paro Beinei Ha'am. The only thing I don't understand here, honestly, to be quite honest with you, is footnote number 6. I have no clue what he's saying here in footnote number 6. He said, Ba'od it parsem kibal mofsim tchila eitzal amon v'rak acharkach eitzal achachomim. I'm not sure that's exactly what Rameh Simcha has in mind. Okay, that's as far as that's concerned. Now, I gave you a second page, and we're going to look at...
I think Rabbi Soloveitchik quotes Rav Hirsch on this pasuk.
Oh, really?
Who says that they were so impressed.
That's rare.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because this comes after Makas Bechoros, Makas Choshech, if I'm not mistaken, this pasuk. That the people were so impressed with they realize at that moment that with the 3 days or 6 days of Choshech, that the Israelites didn't take advantage of that, and they saw that that Moshe and the people were sincere about their plight and their salvation. So that's what they were. Why this pasuk appears here?
I heard something else from the Rebbe about Ish Moshe, but I'm trying to remember what he said. Maybe it'll come to me as we go along. Now, where's the next piece? I'm sorry, I accidentally closed.
The next one I have is Yud Al Gimel on the same pasuk.
No. On the other page, they gave two different pages. On the second page, just remind me, because after I did the photocopying, I closed the book.
Ayin Tes.
Pasuk Chaf Beis.
In what parent? Yud Beis.
Yud Beis.
Yud Beis Chaf Beis. Okay, good. Thank you so much. Okay.
We're skipping to that.
Yeah, I'm telling you, as you were here when I gave the introduction.
That's fine.
That this parsha, Bo, in Meshech Chochma is a book. It's an entire book. You can spend literally a year on Parshas Bo alone.
Wow.
It's unusual. Most of the parshios are five pages. He goes on and on. And basically, he writes a commentary on the Haggadah. By the way, now...
It's in the Haggadah.
Right? Now they published the Haggadah based on the Meshech Chochma. The Meshech Chochma did not publish the Haggadah. But they took these pieces from Parshas Bo.
His first paper starts very late. It's, he's like four or five aliyahs in before his first comment on Bo. He skips the whole first section.
So what I wanted to learn with you is a pasuk that reads the following, Vatem lo tetsu ish mi pesach beso ad boker.
What daf is this?
Again, the best thing would be if you took the photocopies, because that would save me, because I'm using a different edition of Ramesh Simcha.
Yeah, one? Yeah. I intense. All right, I have the same one here.
No, you definitely have the same one, but I can't tell you where it is in your book, because I have a different...
I don't have the same pagination. No, it's not. I have a different I intense. Okay, good. I'm in the right place.
Oh, there are three there. I see. Raz has that one. No, it's fine. I thought you were holding on to this one. I put it on the table and I thought you took it, but okay, fine. Yeah. Now, this is a very interesting piece. I'm not sure that I have the English nomenclature to really define what he's saying in a very fine-tuned way, but we'll try to work this out together. Just by way of introduction, Rav Meir Simcha assumes a distinction between what he calls Gufei Torah and what he calls Harchakos and Gzeros. Now, obviously, in a halachic framework, Gufei Torah, meaning the Tariag Mitzvahs, that's Ikar, the Gzeros, and our chakos, these are all rabbinic. They're very important. The Torah says, "Lotosu mikol shayirucha," but they certainly take a back seat to Gufei Torah. I mean, Gufei Torah is primary, but Rav Meir Simcha has a whole nother perspective. Hine hamizbonein. If you contemplate the situation of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, yireh. You will certainly agree with me. Ki b'Mitzrayim nishtakach mehem gufei Torah. Now, again, I'm not sure
which
that
gufei Torah was there.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm going to get to in just a second. I'm not sure if the people of Israel ever got the Tariag Mitzvahs, but one thing they certainly did get, and that is Avodah Zarah. They certainly were given the Isra of Avodah Zarah, and yet nishtakach mehem. They completely were they were cut off. They were alienated from this Iser of which is Gufei Torah of Avodah Zarah, and that's why the Pesukim Vaschanan describes them as Goy Miker of Goy, and Chazal in the Medrash say Halolo Avodah Zarah Halolo Avodah Zarah, that at Kriyat Yamsuf HaKadosh Baruch Hu was faced with the argument of the Malachi Ashoris, why are you saving the Jewish people? And you're letting the Mitzrayim drown. Why is that so? I mean, what did you flip a coin? These are idol worshippers, and these are idol worshippers. The concept of goy mikarev goy means that they were completely in a sense impacted by the lack of piety, the irreligious nature of the Egyptian worship. However, v'cheinei feru bris mila. Here's another gufei Torah. I mean, the Torah says that if you violate this great mitzvah of bris mila, yachayv kares. So that certainly is up there. And they already had the mitzvah of bris mila dating back to the time of Avraham Avinu. However, he says, let's not write off the Jewish people. Even though it's true that they violated gufei Torah, omnom, however, hasyagim vagedarim shamru biyisron gadol. When it came to the fences around the Torah, to creating that kind of a barrier from separating the Jewish people from the mitzrim, and we'll see, for example, that throughout Jewish history, Chazal were always working beyond the 613 mitzvahs to create barriers and separate the Jewish people from the other nations of the world. Can anybody think of any examples where the Rabbanon instituted a siag to keep us far away from the Goyim? Yayin Nesach, excellent. Well, Yayin Nesach is Dorites, but Stam Yayin, what else? Bishol Akum, Cholav Akum.
1 minute.
Maybe Pasakum.
What
maybe even Shemanakum.
What can you do on Shabbos that you can't do on Yom Tov? You can't invite a goy to your house on Yom Tov because you might cook for him. But on Shabbos, your food is already cooked.
Oh, okay. But I was just trying to focus on what's called Siyogim and Archokos. He's saying that Siyogim and Archokos are instituted to guarantee the future of the Jewish people as a separate, distinct nation. And in Mitzrayim, they were very, very careful about Siyogim and Gdarim. Things that you wouldn't even find, perhaps, in Shulchan Aruch. Maybe you would in one Sif in Shulchan Aruch when he talks about staying far away from the Goyim and not imitating the Goyim.
You don't dress in your clothes.
Exactly, that's what he points out. B'mechilta it says, Lo shinu eshmam, lo shinu es lishonam, lo gilu mistorin. In other words, in a secular, so to speak, nationalistic context of maintaining the culture of the Jewish people, the names of the Jewish people, and the language of the Jewish people, here, Shamru b'Yitaron Gadol. Yitaron Gadol means they went to it almost an extreme. Now that's one historical period of time, which is called Golus Mitzrayim. Now we're going to fast forward to Golus Bavel. So imagine the situation with Ezra, you know, when he's trying to get the people to leave Bavel at the time of Bayesheni, the beginning of Bayesheni. Hayu Shomrim Gufei Torah. Now we'll see what he means here. But he's saying that there was a dedication to the religious piety of Judaism, except when it came to all the cultural and halachic issues that the goal of which is to separate us from the Goyim. Omnam asyogim vagedorim avru. Avru means they violated. So for example, based on a parasha in Ezra and Nehemiah, it says that b'neim hayu medabrim ashdudis. They spoke the local language in that area called ashdudis. Shinu Shmam, they changed their names, and ultimately Hischatnu im Goyei HaAratzos. There was intermarriage, and in fact, when Ezra and Nehemiah came on Aliyah to establish the Second Commonwealth, so many of the Jews were married to non-Jews, and this is all given the fact that they were observant in so many ways. Could you imagine? I remember a story about someone who was an active member of a certain Orthodox synagogue, and he was really great, he was very pious. There's only one problem: he was married to a non-Jewish woman. And the shul had to decide, and the rabbi, there was a whole pulmus about it, what to do with this guy. He's married out of the faith, and yet he's a pious Jew. You know, it sounds like a non-entity. How can you tell me that they were Shomer Gufei Torah, and at the same time, Hischatnu im Goyei HaRatzos, but yet you know, contemporary life has seen something that is a throwback to Bavel. Kmo should never be Ezra. If we take a look at the overall sweeping history of the Jews in exile, Haikarhu, and this is Rabbi Simcha's new perspective, is what's Iker, what's Tofel? We would think that Gufei Torah comes first, and that's Iker, that's primary, and you know, the Siogim and the Gdorim and all that, that's secondary. Nain, he says, if you want to maintain the continuity of the Jewish people in exile, now what was Tofel becomes Iker, what's Iker becomes Tofel. He changes our whole system of priorities. Ha'Iker u'Siogim v'Gdorim, because what's the ultimate goal and the agenda of these Siogim and Gdorim? Shelo yis'arvu bein ha'amim, so that we won't intermarry and will maintain our separateness amongst the nations of the world. You know, I was always confused, I'll use that word, about what I saw amongst the shlichim of Chabad. And I'm not trying to be in any way to be negative about it, but I found that very often, you know, if you go to these far out places where all you get is Chabad in terms of religious Jews, you'll find that the Chabadnikim will put emphasis on things that you and I would have said are secondary. There's so much involvement in Jewish culture and the programs they create, and they talk about the dancing and the singing. It's interesting. I was recently in Cyprus. The Rav there, the Chabad rabbi in Cyprus, in Lanaker, it's called. He's outstanding. And when he got up to speak, I was hoping I would hear some halachic discussion about kashrus. You know, he's in charge of kashrus for the entire country of Cyprus, and many of those products reach Israel. And instead, he was giving over chassidus. And all this chassidus was about, you know, the love that we have to have, the harmony. And I was wondering, like, isn't he dropping? So I was looking at it from a Litvak perspective, right? So a Litvak wants to hear hardcore halachas. You know, I wanted to hear a pilpul about tarovas, min b'shenu mino, you know, is it bat b'shishim or not? And he's giving a whole chassidish discussion to people who barely know an aleph from a beis. But it's interesting because in Galut, when you're trying to save Jews from intermarriage, maybe the educational program in terms of priorities is totally different than what it would be in a normal situation if the Jewish people were living together in Eretz Yisrael and we wanted to uplift them for Gufei Torah. That's where we should put the emphasis. But in Galus, our biggest fear is separating ourselves from the Goyim. I'm absolutely convinced that Orthodox Jews, let's talk about modern Orthodox Jews, I don't know what would be in Satmar and, you know, in those circles, I can't tell you. But in America, the biggest challenge is what's between me and the Goyim? So, for example, if you look at the WASPs, you know, I'm talking about the elite amongst the whites, mm-hmm. right? They, you know, these guys are intellectuals, they're scientists, and they're inventors, and they're rich, you know, entrepreneurs. And a Jew asks himself, well, why am I different than them? What makes me special? And you're telling me I'm the chosen people? The concept of chosenness is probably the greatest challenge for modern Orthodox and even conservative Jews in America. Well, what makes me the chosen people? So that's what we call Siogim Ugdorim. Now here's a fascinating comment to the Gemara in Sota. This is a comment on the Nisim V'Niflos at the time of Ezra. It says, Ad Yavaram Chashem, which is a pasuk in Bishalach, in the Shira, Ad Yavaram Zukhanisa. And Chazal say about this pasuk, Re'uyim Ho Yisrael Lasuslem Nes B'yamei Ezra. He says that all those great miracles at the time of the splitting of the sea could have and should have happened at the time of the Ezra, because at that time Ezra again was taking the people back from Babel to Eretz Yisrael. It's kind of a redemption, a process similar to Yetzias Mitzrayim. He should have had the Nisim, and Ezra was such a great leader. Ela Shegaram Achet. But because of sin. What was the sin that we're talking about. Pirush, says Rabbi Meir Simcha, a whole new pshat in the Gemara in Sota, that the chait was not gufei Torah, but rather sha'avru agdor vasyogim. In other words, the Jewish people at that period of time, at the time of Golis Bavel, were guilty of intermarriage, and all this intermarriage was because they didn't pay any attention to the gedorim and the siyogim. They were all together in a pluralistic society with the goyim. Lekach amru b'medrash, medrash chazis, which is the name of one of the many, many different types of medrash parashantal, me'heichan hoy Yisrael menaschin b'midbar. In other words, the parsha in Pinchas speaks about the mitzvah of nisuch hayayim. We don't know that there were vineyards in the midbar. So where did they get the wine from? And the Medrash comments, mimasha hayu tagrei umas olam mochrim. Who was selling wine? There were retailers that would export wine, and they would carry it through the midbar. They look for people, and they would find people who would buy this yayin. And technically, adayin lo nesar yayin amoni. Yayin amoni means yayin of akum. So the Jewish people had no problem taking that wine and using it for nisach al gavi mizbeach in the Mishkan. Lachain amar Yechezkel. Yechezkel now introduces a new concept in the Sochim, which is called Mimashke Yisrael. Now that's going to be a concept, a halachic concept, which historically presents itself after the Midbar. In other words, we're in a post-Midbar period. And what does Mimashke Yisrael tell me? That don't take wine that you buy on the in the shuk in the marketplace from the goyim and use it for the mizbeach. It's possible the mizbeach. Why? Because mimashki Yisrael. Yisrael means you have to take wine that's kosher, that's Jewish wine. Shelo yehe. It shouldn't be kemo shahoyah b'midbar miyayin ha'amoni, which means that they bought wine from the goyim.
Yechezkel was at the end of Bayit Rishon. So you're saying the entire Bayit Rishon, they were still using wine from Goyim, down the Mizbeach?
I don't know. That you have to check out the history of it. I don't know exactly at what point the Chazal prohibited Yayin Shel Goyim. It's a sugya at the end of Masechta Avodah Zarah, but I'm not sure. I mean, I learned that sugya. There probably is a way of figuring out exactly historically when
that happened. Yechezkel himself was, as you know, at that transition
point. Right, and that was about the transition point in which they instituted an Iser of Yayin Shel Goyim, and Yechezkel said that don't even dream of taking that Yayin Shel Goyim and using it for Nisach Al Gabi Mizbeach. Why? Because you can only use on the Mizbeach that which you're allowed to eat, or in this case, drink yourself as kosher food, but here it's not kosher. So it means, and Rabbi Simcha is quite amazed, you know, at the thought of this medrash that Nisachim Hayu Bamidbar Miyayin Avodah Zarah. In other words, we took this wine from non-Jewish sources. Now the yayin itself is kosher, but if it's purchased from non-Jewish sources, you know, you may want to know whether or not it was used as for their libations in their idol worship, the idolatry. Let's assume that you have reason to believe that what they used for idol worship was, you know, was poured over their altars, and what's being sold by the Tagrim, by these retailers, is yayin that wasn't used for Avodah Zarah. But anyway, it comes from a non-Jewish source, and we buy it from the idol worshippers. Acher kach, at a later period of time, post-Midbar, gozer al yenom, the Rabbanan instituted a gzeira that we shouldn't buy non-kosher wine, meaning wine from non-Jewish sources. The wine per se is kosher. Ushmanam, and we shouldn't take the shem and the oil of goyim. The Gemara says that the gzeira of shemen was a gzeira she'efsha latzibur lamod bo, so they dropped it. Upitam, and also here also we dropped part of it, not all of it. right? For example, we don't buy paspalter, but we can buy manufactured breads. Laso siag v'geder ben Yisrael li'avod zara. And the purpose of all these gzeros and siagim was to separate the Jewish people from the nations of the world, so that we retain our status as a separate independent entity and with our own nationality. It's very similar to what we spoke about, Lo Shinu es Lashon, Lo Shinu es Lashonam, that they remained separate from the Goyim. Last week we discussed Erevah, Geter Erevah, that the people of Israel did not mix with the Goyim. They didn't have any intimate relationships with the Goyim. And all this is Shalo Yavdu Kiyumam Vitzurasam Hala'umit. Look at that word, Hala'umit. This is a modern Hebrew word. And we're looking at a text that dates back 120 years ago. But Rav Meir Simcha was one of those what we call Chovei Tzion, you know, lovers of Zion. And he was also very into bringing back Hebrew as a spoken language. So at any opportunity that he gets, he uses a terminology that you might find amongst the secular Zionists, like Le'umiyut. But he wants to point out that Le'umiyut is something very critical. And that when we're talking about Golus, Le'umiyut takes precedence, because unless we have this identification, almost a cultural or nationalistic identification with the Jewish nation, eventually we'll get lost. We'll get, you know, intermarried with the Goyim. Lachain Omar al Yudches Dovar. Now this is the Gemara at the end of the first parak of Shabbos. And there the Gemara goes through 18 different gzeros. And the Gemara says, Af Elio Eino Yochel Levatlon. No one has the authority to rescind or to undermine and void any of those gzeros, of those Yudches gzeros. Pirush. What's the deeper meaning of this statement in the Gemara? Shenechitzas Asyogim, meaning the absolute compelling and urgent necessity for these siyagim, the 18, muchrachim li'uma. They are absolutely critical for the nation. Otherwise the nation will not continue to survive. Ad ki afim yavoa mevaser al Mashiach gam kein lo yivatlu. In other words, even when Mashiach, somebody is going to be the mevaser, he's going to be the harbinger, even when Mashiach himself comes, there's no authority that could undermine the Yudches Gzeros. Oz Kuliyama Avodim Yisrael. And that's going to be a period of time at the end of days when we'll know clearly the difference between the Jewish nation and the other nations. The other nations are like Avodim, they're like slaves or servants. V'yasa Hashem Yisbarach Mashiach Virtsono. And God will control nature the way He wants to. Dugma halacha psuka de Rabbi Zeir shebno Yisrael chmir al atzman. He says, I'll give you an example of a siag which the Jewish people, in this case the Jewish ladies, took upon themselves, and that again separates the Jew from the non-Jews, and that's the law of Nida, because we're talking about tipas dam kechardal, which is a very small amount that they saw on a kesem, they saw on a stain on a garment, which according to strict halacha should be mutter because it's only a tipa and it's not a significant size, but they took it upon themselves. And all this is a geder harchaka, which historically reflects on the most glorious periods of Jewish history, when it wasn't just gufei Torah that they were interested, but they were also interested in creating a certain kind of an ambiance and a separateness from the Goyim. Ubizmana migdosh al kochach sheibatel di lav hachi lo teda isha masai lahavi karban ziva. He says that because of the necessity during a certain historical period of time to make these harchakos from the Goyim, at the time of the Beis HaMikdash liyasid lavo, we won't need that particular kind of harchaka. V'hine Avram asa siag v'gader kimo v'erev tavshilin. So the Medrash says that Avram himself made siyag, he made a geder. And on the pasuk in Parshas Vayera it says, "Vahu achrov mipnei hayochid behine al shnio sarais amru ushmartim es mishmarti asu mishmeres mishmarti loze nemar al afal Avram ekev asher shomar mishmarti." Now, what does the word mishmarti means? It means the siyagim, it means the gedorim, it means something like Erev Tavshilin. These are rabbinic laws. And it says, Vahu acharov mipnei ayichud. Yichud means that Avraham Avinu already observed the laws of Yichud, which are all rabbinic laws and siyagos and gedorim. And Vishmartim es Mishmarti, then Avraham Avinu also observed the Shnios Larayos. These are distant relatives which aren't necessarily in the geder of Erva, but yet the Chachamim made a siag and they said avoid any relationship even with these who are not really Arayos, but we'll call them Shnios Arayos. All that is included under Mishmeres L'Mishmarti, and this is the mandate that's placed on the shoulders of the rabbis in every generation to decide halacha, and they should create a mishmeres. They should create protective boundaries. And these protective boundaries are not just to prevent a person from violating an aver of gufei Torah, but it's also to preserve the nation of Israel on a national level. And the Torah describes Avraham Avinu as Vishamru Derech Hashem, which Chazal say that he established Shmira and Siyogim and Gidorim. So what is unique about Avraham Avinu? What description does HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose to designate Avraham as someone who's superior, someone who's special? It's Shmira. And what is Shmira? Shmira means Asu Mishmeres L'Mishmarti, to create Gidorim and Siyogim. Vehine Iov Hayeshomer Mitzvos Vegufei Torah Vesar Meira. But just 1 minute, I need to take a break. I want to share with you the Meshech Chachma on next week's Parsha, but it's really related to this Meshech Chachma.
Okay.
In Parshas Vishalach, on the Pasuk Hamayim Lehem Choma Miminom Umismolam. So you can find this, for those who have the actual text, take a look in Perek Yud Dalet, Pasuk Chav Dalet. I don't have a photocopy of it for you. And he says the following. He says, Mi'isboninus b'divrei Torah nireh. It would seem that when we analyze the Torah, we can divide up the Torah into two parts. Mitzvos masios. These are the ritual laws, the active laws, action, avodah zarah, arayos. And in these cases, if you violate with a maisa avera, you get a very severe punishment. Kare, skila, malchus, misus bezdin.